Spirit Blade Underground, episode 423. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 423.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community that you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. Still Peter Franson here from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and like me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, my first impressions of the highly anticipated, I gotta say, No Man's Sky video game for both the PC and PS4. I played it on PS4, so I'll give you my thoughts about that, along with some other mental wanderings and potpourri things thrown in to fill out the show today. All right, let's get to it. Nice. Another achievement unlocked. I bet I got more achievements than anybody I know.
Yes, sitting in front of a video game for 5 hours a day is quite an achievement.
See, this is why I don't like talking to you.
Then why don't you spend more time with real people?
Because real people don't respond to console commands.
Wow, Peter. You unlocked yet another achievement. You must have more achievements than anyone you know. Behold, you are great, and greatly to be praised.
Yeah, better. All right, well, I'm going to share kind of some off-the-cuff thoughts, as it were, about the No Man's Sky video game that just came out on PS4 this week. I've really been looking forward to this game, not with the kind of hype that I think a lot of people have had for it. Apparently, some people have been like, this is the second coming of gaming, you know, and are just anticipating this massive be-all, end-all, you know, game that's just going to last them for the rest of their lives. And so it's been hyped up quite a bit, and I think a lot of that is due to the fact that they started promoting this thing way too early. I mean, it was three E3s ago, so not this last one, and not the year before, but the year before that it took the stage and had a gameplay demo on stage. And so for me, that's like, that is way, way too soon, especially to put a gameplay demo up there and then not have a release forever and ever. Amen, you know? It's been delayed a number of times, and the team, I think, has grown a little bit over the course. It started out as, you know, really being a very, very small team. I think the team did grow. Sony started backing it some more, and for various reasons, it's just kind of developed a little bit of a hype train going along with it. And my hype for the game really kind of disappeared almost completely when it failed to come out in the fall. I really thought after last summer's E3, we were going to get a fall 2015 release. That did not happen. And so I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to pretend this game is never coming out until it is in my hands, you know? And, you know, sure enough, they got a release date for the summer that was then delayed even more, you know, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, the reason that I've been looking forward to this game is because I like open world, first-person open world RPGs, specifically RPGs. Although I have developed a taste for a lot of the elements in the Far Cry games, specifically 2 through 4. I've enjoyed a lot about those games. What I've hated about those games is the kind of open, or the missions that force you to play in ways that you don't normally when you're doing open world stuff. And if the trade-off for avoiding those kinds of, like, forced timed missions or forced stealthy missions or whatever gameplay they're trying to force on me, if the trade-off for that is to have virtually no story or no story at all, I'm willing to explore that kind of a game. And that's what No Man's Sky, so far, in the first, I've played about maybe just 4 hours of the game so far, that's kind of what it is. It's an open-world sci-fi space exploration game without the main storyline that, you know, and story missions and stuff like that. It's exploring, it's collecting a lot of resources, it's using those resources to craft equipment and to maintain equipment and to repair equipment and to upgrade and build new equipment. You know, you've got your environmental suit that you're exploring in, and that I haven't gotten into much upgrading, really no upgrading at all of that suit at this point. But as I understand, that's going to be the closest thing to kind of upgrading your own personal stats, you know, and well, defensive stats, I should say. You know, you can upgrade your shielding system and your environmental protection systems, and which effectively serve as your health bar most of the time. If your shields, if your environmental, like your hazard protection and your life support ever run out, then you are very close to dying, and whatever caused those other things to run out will probably kill you really quick. There's almost kind of an emergent kind of story, or emerging, I'm not sure which is the right word, that you kind of take in as you're exploring. There's bits of lore that will kind of be revealed as you discover new technology recipes and artifacts and things like that. And there's kind of an option at the very beginning of the game to either just do a freeform exploration and have no guidance, or receive guidance in the form of this character or thing called Atlas. It's very mysterious at the very beginning, and it gives you the option to kind of follow the guidance provided by this mysterious Atlas, which is a being. It's, you know, it's not like a, you know, like an Atlas, like we think of an Atlas, but I mean, I guess it's appropriately named, isn't it? So, you know, you can either get guidance from this Atlas thing, whatever it is, or you can choose to do freeform exploration. And I would recommend taking up, you know, the offer of getting guidance from Atlas, because you can still freeform explore as much as you want. But this Atlas thing kind of puts almost like tutorial type messages on the bottom of your screen every now and then to help you know, what you should be focusing on in order to, you know, progress. And I'm guessing that this Atlas system is what is going to guide players to the center of the universe, which has kind of like been, you know, in the buzz for a while now, for the game. That's been talked about as the optional main goal of the game, if you want to, you know, give yourself a main goal. But anyway, there is so much to do. And even with that Atlas guide thing on, most of the time, I still feel without direction. I still feel like there are so many things I could do, so many things I could choose to build or upgrade or go and explore and check out. There's so many different kind of, should I focus on upgrading? Should I focus on trading? Should I focus on, you know, just building my my finances up, or, you know, or upgrading my ship? I mean, there's just so much that you could do, so much that you could explore. And if you hadn't heard already, the game is entirely procedurally generated. Procedurally, because it's not technically random. There's technically no such thing as random, you know, level generation. It's some kind of a program that is created that gives the software a procedure to follow in order to generate unique environments and things like that when you're doing like a roguelike or something like that. So they're all technically like procedural games as opposed to being truly random. At least that's my understanding. And this game is certainly marketing itself as procedural. And so every world that you go to is basically created the moment before you first lay eyes on it, you know. And the same thing with all the creatures that are on that planet, all the resources that are on that planet, all the cycles of day and night and seasons and all those kinds of things, you know, it's all procedurally generated, which means that really there's in theory, you're never going to find the same type of planet, you know, more than once. That they're all going to, they'll have some similarities. There's kind of like a pastel, is it pastel or pastel? I think it's pastel. Kind of color palette to the whole game. And so there's a certain visual aesthetic that's consistent through the whole game. But I've been to I think at least two planets so far. And I haven't done a ton of space exploration. And there's certainly variety, but at the same time, I can see how after playing this game for a while, you'll kind of feel like, oh, I kind of been to this kind of a planet before. It's, you know, I wonder if it's going to have the immense variety that that would warrant putting more than 30 hours into the game, or like, you know, let alone hundreds of hours, you know. So we'll see. I've been enjoying what the game has to offer so far. The combat was a concern because I suck at video games. I was like, oh man, am I going to be able to handle this? And you really, there's a lot of creatures that are not aggressive towards you, and if you leave them alone, they'll leave you alone. But there are other critters, there's at least one that like aggressively approached me and, you know, started attacking me in the middle of a cave, freaked the crap out of me. And I managed to scare him away or something. I got to upgrade my blaster thing to hurt kill animals or something, because it doesn't kill him right now. But anyway, there's also lots of these like these drones, these kind of AI robot drone type things that fly around, and they're kind of like policing the universe. And if they catch you shooting a creature, or even just mining for material, like shooting inanimate objects, like I'm like not just plants either, like crystals, they get aggressive and they start attacking you. So you got to make sure that you don't do that when those are around, or if you get caught, that you blow those suckers away as soon as you can before they call for more reinforcements, and the whole thing just kind of escalates. It has a similar system to like the Saints Row games, or what I understand to also be true of Grand Theft Auto, where you there's kind of like an aggression level with a faction that can build and get more and more intense and attract more and more opposition to where you are at. You know, the more you're giving that faction problems, you know. But if you go into like one of the shelters, and there are a number of shelters and stuff that you can find on planets, or other types of buildings that you can go into that are, you know, humanoid made buildings, you go into them and that kind of resets that the aggression level of the drones that are out there. So there's definitely a challenge in the game, because the environment is almost always slowly depleting your hazard protection or your life support in some way. So you've always got to be, in addition to finding resources to, you know, upgrade things or create new things, you've always got to be getting resources along the way to maintain your suit's integrity so that you can continue exploring, you know. So it's definitely a survival game as well, in addition to, you know, being exploration and crafting and stuff like that. But I didn't find, you know, despite it being called a survival game, that always sounds more intense to me than what this experience has been for me so far. It's definitely doable. I am not good at action games or hand-eye coordination dependent games. I'm just, you know, I play Skyrim on easy. I play the Fallout games on easy. I play the Far Cry games on easy. And those games on easy, the Far Cry games, that's as intense and difficult as I'm willing to go on those freaking stupid story missions. But anyway, I've really been enjoying No Man's Sky. There are some issues that I have with like the user interface. It's clear from almost the get-go that this game was made for PC, because while you open up your menus, you can cycle between pages of those menus with the L1 and the R1 button. When you're actually selecting something on a specific page, you're doing it by moving a cursor around with the left analog stick. I'm just like, what in the world? Are you kidding me? I mean, what, you know, as opposed to like having, you know, one item highlighted to begin with, and then using the analog stick or the cross pad to move the highlight, you know, to another box and select that box on. No, you're actually moving this cursor around. It's better than some other games I've played where you are moving a cursor with an analog stick or a cross pad. It works better than that, but it still kind of boggles my mind that this game was backed so much by Sony, and they didn't, you know, demand that the developers have a UI that was like made for a gamepad and totally intuitive to a gamepad. And above and beyond that, I'm like, guys, Sony, you've got this touchpad in the middle of your PS4 controller that you can totally use to move a mouse cursor. You know, that's how their browser works. When you get online on PS4, if you use their browser, which is really awkward, you know, you're moving the mouse cursor by, you know, using this touchpad and sliding your thumb or your finger along it. And it's such an intuitive way. It makes so much sense to me. You know, I don't know, as far as ergonomics and, you know, comfort and for grip and all that, if it would be that great of an idea. But it does seem strange that when they have this touchpad there, that they're having you use the left analog stick to control that cursor instead of the touchpad. But whatever. Anyway, I mean, like I said, to begin with, I'm a little bit baffled that they don't have just a different user interface instead of having that cursor being controlled. That's really weird. But there's also some elements of the game that are a little, I don't know, obscure or obtuse, maybe is the word. It's they're just hard to kind of understand. Okay, what, you know, how does this work? What am I supposed to be doing here? And it's not so bad that it's to the point of like, I am not progressing in the game, or I am not getting the experience that I'm supposed to have out of the game. In fact, Sean Murray, the lead developer on this game, a while back compared his desires for this game to what Minecraft was when it first came out, in that Minecraft was a game that before anybody heard of it, you know, there were no tutorials or wikis online. People were just getting into this game and just figuring stuff out for themselves. They were experimenting and mixing elements and ingredients and things together to see what would happen, you know, and it was this very kind of Wild West type of gaming experience, and a community formed online around people sharing what they had discovered is possible in Minecraft. And I think Sean Murray is kind of wanting something similar for this. He's been really careful to avoid giving a lot of details about the game in the past, and really just has expressed numerous times that he really wants players to discover this game for themselves, you know, to the point where there was actually a leaked copy of No Man's Sky that got out, and somebody bought it for like a huge amount of money, and they did a playthrough of the game and apparently were able to get to the center of the universe in 30 minutes, not in 30 minutes, in 30 hours, sorry. And then they started putting their video footage of their playthrough online, and Sean Murray actually tweeted out and reached out to them and said, please don't do this. We really want people to discover this game for themselves, you know. So that's like a big value of the game. And so maybe that's, I'm wondering, part of the reason why sometimes things don't feel as explained as they could be. So, but like I said, one of the reasons I can believe that's purposeful is because I don't feel like it's been hindering my progress through the game or my enjoyment of the game. It's just been like, huh, what am I supposed to, well, let me try this. And I'm wondering if that let me try attitude is something that they want to encourage in this game. But anyway, what else? Apart from the, you know, the user interface and the menus, I really like the controls and how they work. Although I'm grateful that the PS4 gives you the option to remap buttons, because they had you pressing down on the left analog stick and pressing down the right analog stick for things that I wanted those two sticks swapped for. So I just went into my PS4 settings menu and I just swapped so that pushing down on R3 brought about the results of pushing down on L3 and vice versa, you know, so that was able to be fixed. And you know, when you're walking around or, you know, running or in your ship in a planet's atmosphere or in your ship in space, I feel like the controls are pretty good, you know, that's a little bit surprising because, you know, it can be a bit of a challenge in a game like this to have like an on-foot first-person type of experience also work well in a spaceship when you're flying around in space or in an atmosphere. One of the things that they do is they don't give you complete control over the ship at all times. You know, when you're flying around in a planet's atmosphere, if you start like flying straight into a mountain, you will not be able to crash into that mountain. It will like, it has like collision detection or something, and it will have you pull up, beyond your control, so that you will, you know, just go over the surface of that mountain and avoid it. And then likewise, when you are landing, you don't actually have to perform the landing yourself. You know, when you are ready to land in a certain spot, you press the square button, and then it auto lands for you. And so far, I haven't been able to get it to land in a bad place, you know, where it's been like, no, error, cannot land here, you know. So I don't mind to bring about that kind of ease of use. I don't mind them taking a little bit of control out of my hands. And I'm really interested in getting into the space exploration stuff. You know, they make it so that you can't jump right into far-flung, you know, reaches of space right away. You've got to build up and upgrade your thrusters and your pulse drive and your hyperdrive so that you can go, you know, ever more and more faster, quickly. What's the right way to end that sentence? But, you know, increasingly fast. Crap. And because, you know, when you get outside of a planet's atmosphere and you start looking around, you'll see like little blips on your screen that'll indicate, you know, a point of interest. And then it will, just as it will on the surface of a planet when you're walking around, it will also list a time, which represents how much time, given your current speed, it will take you to arrive at that destination. And there are like, you know, when I got outside of my planet's atmosphere that I started on, there was like stuff that was like 8 hours away, 2 weeks away, 4 weeks away. I was like, holy crap. I guess in theory, if you leave your PS4 on for that long, you don't have to upgrade any of your drives. But I imagine if you want to, you know, get to the center of the universe, you're going to have to do some upgrading. So, and I have been enjoying that kind of upgrading collection and, you know, looting and stuff. It's been scratching a lot of the same itch that is scratched when I play a Bethesda RPG of going around and fighting and looting. And although, you know, you don't really loot directly after fighting, except in rare instances. Well, I guess not so rare if you decide you're going to be gung-ho. I haven't been gung-ho. I have not been, you know, a killing machine, you know, going out and killing as many aliens as I can, because I don't want to attract the attention of those drones. But I did kill a couple of those drones, and they get you some cool resources when you kill those. But anyway, yeah, I was just reminded again, as I am when I play a Bethesda RPG, that we seem to have built into us this desire to explore and to be productive. And so we make games about doing those things, board games and video games and even sports to a degree. We assign these score values to achieving a certain thing out on the field, you know. But that's as far as you're going to get me to talk about sports. And I think all those things are an indication of this built-in desire we have to return to work as it was before the fall. The fall brought frustration to our efforts, to all of our endeavors. Anything we try to do to be productive, there are generally things that very frequently get in our way. Or if they don't actually frustrate us, they in some way reduce our potential efficiency in what we're trying to do. And all that frustration, all that crap that makes the very thought of work, you know, just like a big downer, is the result of the fall. But those problems are all going to be removed when Christ restores this world. And in the new heaven and the new earth, in his eternal kingdom, we will be doing stuff. I think we see indications of that in the book of Revelation. And we will we'll be working. We'll be being productive. And it's going to be awesome. It's not going to be like work as we think of it now. It's going to be more in line with what we think of as games now. It won't necessarily be without challenge, but it won't be frustrating. And you might say, well, yeah, some games are frustrating. Well, yeah, I'm just saying games are the closest analog right now. I think it'll be far, far better than the best gaming experience we could possibly have in this life, you know. But anyway, I think that games like this, you know, where we have this inexplicable pleasure that comes from collecting and upgrading and being quote unquote productive in this fictional reality in front of us, I think those can serve as a foretaste, a reminder, and a reason to thank Yahweh and say, thank you, Jesus, that this is a foretaste of the incredible future that you have waiting for me that I cannot even imagine right now. The other thing that kind of popped into my mind while I was playing this was just kind of... Well, let me get back to that in a second. There were some interesting things that if you watch my video, my trial and error video, which I've posted at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, there are just some interesting kind of pseudo-philosophical kind of things, statements being made. Various things that you read or run into in the game will have these kind of somewhat ethereal philosophical statements. And I mean philosophical in quotes and in the kind of negative modern connotation that philosophy has. You know, when you think of philosophers now, you think of people who say a lot of things that, you know, they clearly think are very deep. But you're listening and you're like, that sounds like you're saying nothing. It's because they're using language that's so malleable or vague that it really amounts to saying very little, if anything at all, you know. Whereas real philosophy is about pursuing truth, about the big questions in the world, the universe, in all of reality around us, you know. So it ought to be a very truth-centered endeavor as opposed to this kind of... facsimile of the pursuit of truth that really is just content to go and nod and kind of furrow the brow and smile and squint and say, that's deep, isn't it? When, you know, really? Really? You want to tell me that you know what that means? Why don't you break that down for me, you know? And, well, you know, it's not everyone can understand. Yeah, I don't think you can understand, but whatever. Anyway. I think somebody said a while back that the test of a really good teacher is their ability to explain really and make simple, explain in simple terms very complicated concepts. So not that philosophers, in order to be good philosophers, also have to be good teachers. Okay, I'm giving them a hard time. I'm sorry. but the other thing that kind of popped into my mind, in addition to just like, oh, okay, well, let's see where they're going to go with this. Clearly, they're looking to do some kind of philosophizing, whatever that term means to them. It looks like they're interested in doing it in this game from time to time. But in addition to that, you know, I thought about just the vastness of the universe, the fact that these are planet-sized planets that are being procedurally generated, and which is why they had to use a procedural system, because you couldn't fit that much data in a game if it was like all created beforehand. No, there's no team big enough and there's not enough time to create in advance, you know, all of these you know, planet-sized planets and, you know, real size solar systems and stuff like that. So you know, just the vastness of the galaxy and the universe are just relevant issues. And one thing that I've noticed, and I can't remember the guy's name now, I want to say like Ty something with a tie in it, but he's an African-American scientist who's been on, he was on the Daily, he used to be on the Daily Show. He's one of those talking heads that you'll see on like the quote-unquote History Channel. I say quote-unquote because there's a lot of non-history going on that channel, even when they are calling it history. He was a talking head in the Batman vs. Superman movie, one of the kind of scientific experts that was commentating on, boy, what does it mean about the human race to, you know, the fact that that we've got these aliens that have been confirmed to exist now. I guess we're not all that special, you know. So, and he's not the only one that would kind of, you know, that I've heard over the years say these kinds of things, that, you know, humanity really isn't that special and we ought to be more humble or whatever, you know. And I wonder if that's in some way an attempt at countering what they think is the position of Christians, that, like, you know, we are just kind of the bomb and we're awesome, and, you know, maybe they see that as kind of like, see some kind of arrogance in how Christians view the significance of humanity. But the funny thing is, you know, as we look at the size of the universe, And as we look at that question of like, well, maybe there's aliens on other planets, you know, and boy, if we discovered alien life on other planets, especially intelligent alien life on other planets, well, wouldn't that just, you know, put to shame the, you know, the Bible and just, you know, everything that that Christians believe in or whatever, and oh, guess you're not so significant after all, and, you know, but really the Bible doesn't have, you know, a the Bible has a very humble view of humanity. Like if you look at Job 7:17, it reads, "What is man that you make so much of him and that you set your heart on him?" God sets his heart on us. He's invested in us. And that is mystifying. In Psalm chapter 8, verses 3 through 6 in the ESV, it says, "When I look at your heavens..." In other words, when I look at space, just everything that we can see, and when we look up at night, when I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him? And the son of man that you care for him? Yet you have made him a little lower than the heavenly beings and crowned him with glory and honor. You have given him dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet. So the writers of scripture are mystified by this as well. They don't have this self-entitlement view. But at the same time, they recognize that for whatever reason, God is invested in us. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know why that would be. And I ask the same question myself now. In Genesis 1:26, we learn that God made humanity in his image. And scripture is not, crystal clear on what exactly that means. There's some different thoughts out there that I think are thought-provoking and worth consideration. But we don't really know exactly what that means to be created in God's image. But for whatever reason, he decided to create these beings that in some way reflected who he is. And that alone gives us like monumental significance, because God is the most significant being in all of reality. There is no one more significant than him, because he made everything. He is it. He is the one. There is no one that is even comparable to him, And then after making us in his image, he gave us the freedom to just reject him if we wanted to. And we did. That's what we chose. And then in Romans 5:8, despite that, we see that God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ, God himself, died for us. So it's not the potential rarity of life on earth that makes us significant. It's not our biological composition when compared to other earth creatures that makes us significant. What makes us significant is that we were created in some way, for some reason. I can only assume because in some way it points a bigger spotlight on God and just highlights how wonderful he is. But for whatever reason, I assume for his glory, he decided to make these finite creatures that in some way reflect who he is. And then he gives them the choice to just leave him behind if they want. And then on top of that, when they do, he dies for them. When they have, they're not entitled, we're not entitled to that at all. Good gravy. That is what makes us significant. Why in the world would the God of the universe do that? Why in the world would he do that? And the bigger we see the universe gets, and potentially the more populated we discover it could be in the future, I have no idea, that question should be even stronger in our minds of why would God do this? And the vastness of the universe, it's not that it says something about us. I think it says something about God and how amazing his love is and how he, condescends to love these finite things that he made, and invests so much in them. I do not understand that, but I do believe that it gives us tremendous, tremendous significance. So I hope that there's no In Search of Truth segment today, and that wasn't intended to be one, but those are some thoughts that kind of came to mind as I was playing No Man's Sky. You can check out my video for more on like what that game looks like and how it plays at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, but I'm really looking forward to getting back and playing a whole lot more of No Man's Sky. Well, I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, and POSTOS. For more information about the CGC network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Data collection complete. Activating MusingNet 1.0.
Well, guys, it is great to be back. Thank you for your patience while I was off-grid the last week and a half. I still work normal work hours for most of those days. We were gone for about 2.5 days, it amounts to, for a family camping trip. But this week I'm also taking 3 days of actual vacation. I don't know how off-grid it's going to be. I'm going to try to be off-grid, but I'm not turning on my autoresponder. I figure out 3 days, it'll just mean some delayed emails and stuff, and I'm still going to be, you know, fulfilling product orders and stuff like that. But I'm going to try and take 3 days of actual vacation this Wednesday through Friday, which by the time you're listening to this may be just about over, unless I decide to just release this early. I might do that. So anyway, if you're waiting to hear from me via email or something, that would be why. So thank you very much for your patience. The time off has been good, and as I record this on Tuesday, I anticipate that the time off Wednesday through Friday will be good. And just, I'm looking forward to rest. You know, I was off grid, but there wasn't a whole lot of resting going on. So I'm looking forward to rest after a decade of working on the same audio drama trilogy and finally having that out and just being able to enjoy seeing that in their rearview mirror for a few days of relaxing here at home. And then I'm looking forward to coming back on Monday and finishing up in the coming weeks the promotion that I have left, the main drive promotion that I have left for the Spirit Blade trilogy, finishing that up and then moving on to my next audio drama project, which I'm not ready to talk about yet, but when I'm ready to talk about it, I will. As a reminder, you can go to youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral to see the video, the Summer of Free video that I put up earlier this week, featuring free video games, comics, and fiction, and then also, of course, my No Man's Sky trial and error video, which you can watch me really get freaked out a lot by the sounds in No Man's Sky. Wearing my headphones always makes the games a lot more present to me, and sometimes more scary and intense than they would normally be. And No Man's Sky, if you've watched any footage for this game, it's presented as a kind of a peaceful or at most mysterious kind of vibe to it. It's not like a horror game or a scary game. I was getting the crap scared out of me frequently during my playing of this game. So I'm looking forward to playing it without headphones going forward. But anyway, so you can laugh at me and watch me freak the crap out of myself while I play that game and just in general make some really boneheaded moves and not understand things. So if that sounds fun, youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral is your destination. And while you're there, if you want to like, share, and subscribe, that would be a great way to help us grow our community. I need to make a video to celebrate 500 subscribers. It feels like it was just a few months ago that we had 300 subscribers at the Christian Geek Central YouTube channel, and it just kind of started ramping up a bit, and before I knew it, coming up on 500, and then I was away for a little bit this weekend on the college retreat for our church's college ministry, and I came back, and holy crap, it's over 500 now, so I need to try and make time to do a thank you to everybody for helping to make that happen. Wow, I did not see that coming. First on Facebook this week at facebook.com/spiritbladeinfo is part two of my interview with Sean Anthony Roberts, who plays Brother Salos in the Spirit Blade trilogy. And then if you want to like us while you're there, then that'll help you get the latest behind-the-scenes content now through the end of August. All of the behind-the-scenes content for Spirit Blade or World of Shadows will be appearing first on Facebook at facebook.com/spiritbladeinfo. As a reminder, the Legacy Edition of the original Spirit Blade is free for a limited time at spiritblade.com. If you've never checked out this series before, or if you know someone who might like it, spiritblade.com is the destination. And also leaving a review of our audio dramas on either iTunes or Amazon would be very helpful. I want to say a big thank you to Nathan Norman and the other folks that participated in the thread on the Christian Geek Central forums. Welcome me back and just sharing your appreciation for me and for my work, and that was really good. It was really well timed. I've just been kind of exhausted for a number of reasons that I shared in the past, and so coming back to that was wonderful. And I have missed this community while I've been away, and I was glad to come back and get caught up on your comments and conversations, and that was just a really special thing. And you know, I'm the type of person, and I mentioned this in my response post there, you know, a lot of artists I've found this is true of, a lot of creative types I've found this is true of, whether you're, you know, a writer or whether you're creating YouTube content or doing a podcast or any creative thing that you're doing and putting out there for people, you can get 100 attaboys and you can get 100, wow, this was great. Wow, this is really meaningful to me. But for my own weakness in my flesh, the one comment that says, well, that wasn't so great, you know, even if it's a pretty tame comment like that. And sometimes, oddly enough, the ones that are like, that was terrible and that was absolute crap, you know, those are actually a lot easier for me to ignore, oddly enough. But, you know, all it takes is one, that wasn't so great, you know, and that's the one that in my weakness, in my flesh, haunts me and that I turn over in my head that I give way more weight to than I should, simply because it's not because of the particular person it's coming from. That rarely has anything to do with it. But just simply because it's negative. So it's a weakness of my own that assigns such weight to negative feedback. But, you know, that's still the reality. As much as I recognize that it's a weakness of mine, that hasn't cured me of it. Recognizing the problem, you know, they say that's a first step, but it's very rarely the cure and has not been in my case. It's a problem that I've just been inching away from in terms of my personal growth, inching away from, frustratingly so, over years. And I feel like it's still such a big problem for me. So all that to say, circling back, I actually, you know, When I saw all those kind words on that thread, I copied and pasted them into a document that I've had on my computer that I really failed to remember to update when I should. But it's an encouraging feedback document that I have, where I copy and paste encouraging feedback that's really just validating and assuring to me. And so those comments were all put in there and I hope to remember to go back and reflect on them, since I'm such a it's so easy for me to just look at that one comment and, like I said, stew in it and just think, you know, maybe this isn't what I should be doing, you know, maybe I've misjudged, you know, what my strengths are, what my calling is, you know, maybe I really need to be looking at spending my time a different way, you know, so. So anyway, I really appreciate your encouragement, guys. And also, there have been several other people. Francisco is one that comes to mind, and I know I'm missing some other folks that commented on YouTube or that messaged me personally, or Greg Mitchell on Facebook. Thank you guys so much. Thank you so much for your encouragement. That means a lot. I wanted to just briefly comment on the college retreat that I was on this last weekend. And just how kind of God orchestrated some of it was, we were going through the book of Ephesians, and I even since getting back, I haven't checked on the Christian Geek Central or the old Spirit Blade blog site to see if I've taken us through the book of Ephesians yet. I've been making my way, I think, chronologically through the Bible. I may have done Ephesians. I can't remember. I need to look. Somebody will, I'm sure, figure this out before I get around to looking. But as we went through this book, I was like, oh, if I haven't gone through this book with the Christian Geek Central community, I want to do that. I want to do that maybe soon. Maybe ditch the chronological thing that I've been doing and make an exception and go through Ephesians, either for the first time or again, or I don't know what. But I'm probably not going to make that a priority. I'll probably continue with the chronological thing. I don't know. Maybe I don't want to be a slave to that. I want to leave room for how the Spirit is moving. But let me tell you what caught my attention. That is the pastor of the college ministry was going to the book of Ephesians and bringing out of the text the fact that it says so much about our identity as believers, and then also about what we are called to be as a community and relationally as we interact with each other. And those two things have just been on the surface of my mind for at least a few years now, I want to say. I want to say 2 or 3 years. The concepts of identity and then the concept of relationships. Because I think those are two areas that we as geeks, we tend to be damaged in. We tend to be dysfunctional in some way. we tend to, I mean, just speaking for myself, I just totally get my sense of identity from all the wrong places. I try to pull it from the places that the world is telling me to pull it from. You know, if you look at just kind of the philosophy of the world and the American spirit and all that kind of stuff, it's all about achievement and going out and achieving things. And, you know, being recognized for things, you know, that's why when people die, we talk about their accomplishments in America, even at, you know, Christian, biblical Christian memorial services, we can spend a lot of time talking about their accomplishments. And I'm not saying that that can't be done for good reasons, but I think, in a lot of cases, it's done for the wrong reasons. And I would argue that in most cases, outside of a biblical context, it's done for the wrong reasons. You know, we're trying to assign significance and value to people because of what they contributed to society or what they accomplished that was impressive or whatever, you know. And that is not where our identity and our worth and our significance comes from, as I mentioned in the No Man's Sky segment today. And Ephesians tells us about what God has done for us, what he has achieved for us, what he has promised for us, what significance he has given to us. And then in light of that, he tells us in the chapters that follow what we ought to be as a community, how we ought to be reflecting the attitude of Christ in community, what that looks like, you know, mechanically, day to day, how we ought to think of each other and look at each other and behave toward each other, you know. And I think there's so much common to, statistically, common to geeks, to you and I, that is dysfunctional in the areas of how we view ourselves and then how we interact with others. And I think there's a lot of relationship between the two as well. I think the dysfunction that we experience in our interactions with others is the result of our dysfunction in how we view ourselves, how we fail to apply in a practical, real, not just nice, warm, fuzzy idea kind of way, the grace, the forgiveness of Jesus and the righteousness that is credited to us because of Jesus. We are trying to just justify ourselves and establish our own rightness in the eyes of ourselves and in the eyes of others, instead of allowing the righteousness of Christ to be applied to us. And that can just motivate us to be silent when we shouldn't be silent, or speak out and be abrasive when we shouldn't speak out, you know, or all kinds of other forms of interacting, interactional crap, but all kinds of dysfunction in our interactions, you know, with each other. And, so anyway, I was just moved. I was encouraged. I was corrected. Just a lot of good things came out of this time in Ephesians at this college retreat over the weekend. And so, I want to encourage you to read through Ephesians. It's a short book. You could do it sometime this week to read through the book of Ephesians. It's 6 chapters. As I'm looking at my Bible, it's 1, 2, 3.5 pages. 3.5 pages. I want to encourage you to consider reading through the book of Ephesians this week and thinking about your relationships, thinking about how you view yourself, thinking about how you interact with people online, whether that be at Christian Geek Central or anywhere else. Ephesians is certainly a model of, you know, as I was thinking, I was like, wow, this is what, you know, I see a lot of Ephesians going on in Christian Geek Central. I think that we've got a really unique community, a sadly unique community. But it's, I'm really grateful for the community we have, for the atmosphere that we have there. And yet as I look at Ephesians, I'm like, wow, there is so much more that we could, press into and move toward that God is calling us toward, instead of being kind of self-satisfied and content with where we're at. There is so much more beauty that we don't even consider to be possible in our relationships, that is possible as we consider rightly our identity in Christ, our righteousness in Christ, and what kind of relational potential that unlocks in our interactions with others. So anyway, all that to say, I found Ephesians to be, like I said, moving, correcting, guiding, And so I want to encourage you to read through the book of Ephesians this week. Like I said, 3.5 pages. Wouldn't take long for you to read. All right, I think that's about it. As a reminder, guys, and as always, you know, if you want to help make sure Spirit Blade Productions can... Boy, this is just a really rough transition. Trying to be useful in my spiritual equipping of myself and you guys. And now moving into what really is kind of a marketing thing, but at the end of the day, it really does have a very pragmatic spiritual motive behind it. So... If you do appreciate what's going on with this podcast and Christian Geek Central, then one way that you can support that is to make a donation, of any amount really, in any time, or if you want to kind of support and partner with me on an ongoing basis, you can be part of the Spirit Blade Insider Program and get monthly exclusive goodies. And insiders, you're probably wondering where those are this month. I'm late in getting those journal entries out. I didn't record many, maybe any, I'm not sure, but you'll be getting something from me next week once I'm done from taking my 3 days off. Last week was a bit of a roller coaster. There wasn't a whole lot of time that I took out to make audio journal entries, but you'll be getting something from me next week. And anyway, for more information about the Insider Program, you can visit our About page at spiritblade.com. And of course, while you're there, you're also invited to support us by purchasing a download of one of our original sci-fi or fantasy audio dramas for a friend or a family member with our available gift codes. And of course, the Legacy Edition of Spirit Blade is available for free. You can get that yourself or recommend to someone else that they go get it. So again, for all that, spiritblade.com.
Incoming transmission.
This week, Ozfar wrote to me and said, "Hi, Peter, I wanted to talk to you about competitive gaming. As a Christian, are we allowed to participate in this endeavor? Is it a sin to take something used for enjoyment and turn into a way of earning money? Putting aside the benefit of money, I believe a player can grow mentally, emotionally, and socially when participating in competitive gaming. I think this activity can really glorify the name of God, but am still not positive. I would like to see your opinion. Please use scripture if possible. Thank you for your help." Well, thanks for the great question, Ozfar. I see no command in scripture that would indicate it is wrong to make money through competitive gaming or anything else that you enjoy. In fact, the book of Ecclesiastes indicates that, you know, if we are able to get enjoyment in the moment through the work that we're doing, that we ought to do that and recognize that is the gift of God. You know, like that's something that I kind of apply to what I do. And thank Yahweh for repeatedly, not near as much as I should, but I try to do that more and more frequently. Just thank Him and recognize, wow, God, I get to be a part of equipping, encouraging, and inspiring others to follow You more deeply, and I get to do that while talking about laser guns and, you know, and fairy creatures and dragons. All this other crazy crap, you know? That is a freaking gift. That is such a gift. That is such a gift that I'm able to spend my time that way doing something that is useful to others and is also such, in many ways, a very pleasurable experience to me. So yeah, I would recommend the book of Ecclesiastes to kind of get a biblical view of work. There's other places you could go as well, but that would be maybe the first place I would send you. If someone is presenting you with scripture that they believe indicates that somehow competitive gaming would be sinful as a career, please let me know. The only thing that I can think of is that you'd want to count the cost very carefully before heading into that, because competitive gaming is profitable and can be a career for a very select few who get lucky enough, who are skilled enough, who God just orchestrates for whatever reasons that they be with, you know, like the right teams that go and compete, you know, as part of team competitions, or, you know, just get connected to the right people. There's a lot of stuff going on there in that scene, just like there is in the world of acting and music and stuff, that is not just about the ability of the individual. It's about what is marketable, you know? It's about other, you know, personality traits that are needed in order to live that kind of lifestyle and not get burned out by it. You know, so there's a lot of reasons that those kinds of professions are only financially viable for a few people, and so you know you want to, I think, count the cost carefully. And just as I have had to do, you know, because I don't make any money for our family with Spirit Blade Productions. I hate saying that out loud. That plagues me every day. But that's a reality. And it's a cost that I had to count with my wife, you know. So if you have anyone else that's dependent upon you, or if you think you might be heading into a relationship in which someone would be even in part financially dependent upon you, that's a conversation that I think you need to have with the people that are going to be depending on you even slightly financially. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, we just ask the question, is the choice in front of me, whether it's about a career choice or anything else, is this going to increase my ability to love and serve God and the people around me, or is it going to decrease my ability to do that? That even that can be a complicated question to answer, because, you know, sometimes getting a good income can help you bless others, help you take care of your family and be a financial blessing to your church and other ministries or other people as they have needs, you know. But at the same time, if you become a guy who works, you know, like 12 hours a day every day, then, you know, what happens to your family and your friends and the people that you can impact relationally, you know. So, I mean, those are hard questions to sort through, but, I mean, that would be the place I would start, is to say, what effect does this have on my ability to love and serve God and other people? So anyway, yeah, and as far as, you know, your question about, is it okay to earn money or even be, you know, doing something that you really enjoy? Well, there's nothing wrong with earning money or even becoming wealthy, provided we aren't pursuing wealth for our own pleasure. Pursuing riches is sinful, and I think we see that in Proverbs 23:4, 1 Timothy 6:10, and Hebrews 13:5. You guys ever notice I leave spaces there? I leave that just in case anybody wants to try and jot something down. I always wonder if, like, you know, when I do that, is anybody going like, oh, rewind it? Okay, get something to write. Okay. And maybe nobody writes anything down. I assume the vast majority of people don't, but I leave those spaces there. Anyway, that was a weird little behind-the-scenes rabbit trail. Let's get back to like I said, pursuing riches is sinful as far as I can tell. Proverbs 23:4, I think, indicates that, as well as 1 Timothy 6:10 and Hebrews 13:5. But if we find ourselves with wealth, which very often happens just through the course of working hard and serving well, in fact, I'm sure you could find proverbs that would indicate that, you know, by just working hard and humbly serving, the tendency is, the natural principle is that wealth will be acquired, you know. But if we find ourselves with wealth through either our own efforts or through means out of our control, like an inheritance of some kind or a gift of, you know, some lavish gift of some kind, that's a blessing that we can freely enjoy for ourselves and should also use to serve God and others. And I think we see that in Proverbs 3:9 and Ecclesiastes 5:19. So anyway, I hope some of those thoughts in there are helpful as you consider the possibility for yourself or for someone else of entering into competitive gaming as a career. And Ken from Honolulu shared a brief and interesting clip that he recorded at a convention in Hawaii. Take a listen.
I'm here at Comic-Con Honolulu with Colin Ferguson. Most of you would know him as Sheriff Jack Carter from the Eureka series. Mr. Ferguson, I was wondering, on Eureka, from what I understand, they filmed all of the outdoor scenes at once in that one small town. Was it hard to keep continuity and keep your mind that, okay, this scene is for this particular episode or this scene is for that episode?
Well, what we would do when we were shooting exteriors, there were a bunch of different places that we shot the exteriors if we needed to go outside, sort of all around Vancouver. But in shooting the main street of the town, we shot that in Chilliwack, British Columbia. Because it was an hour drive from our studio, we would save up a bunch of scenes. So every 3 weeks we'd go and maybe shoot out 3 or 4 episodes at a time in the small town. Most of the time it's fine. It's not hard to keep track on what's going on with episodes that you've shot. But changing, like, you know, your because it's not one episode. Sometimes you're changing your outfit. Sometimes, you got to go back to makeup and get a cut or a bruise or dust or something on. So it made it a debilitatingly tiring day is what it did. But, additionally, when you're doing that, three different episodes, you have three different directors. Because contractually, as far as the unions go, you have to direct the episode that you direct. So you got the guy in the morning who's got all the time in the world. He's eating up everyone else's day because he's going first. You have two guys waiting for the end of the day to shoot, and they're just, they're looking at their dream shot list go from, 20 shots to 10 shots, and maybe they'll have time for 5 shots, and, trying to tell a story in 5 shots is a little difficult. So it was always an exercise in collaboration going on and compromise.
Now, what would be your dream job or your dream role that you would want to do that is possible for you to do?
I'd love to do a lot of different things because they're so different. Like, I like doing TV because we move so fast and you get to tell so many different stories. So, any sort of compelling TV show would be fantastic. As long as the character's good and I can get into them, then I'm really content doing whatever. As far as big movies go, that would be really fun. But they take so long to shoot. And you don't do them very often. So it's a fun thing to do, but it doesn't keep you occupied through your year. So really, I'd like a varied existence, I think, would be my ideal thing.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Very cool, Ken. I hope that was that convention was like a great experience. I didn't even know there was a convention like that in Hawaii. So very cool. Sounds like that was a neat experience. All right, guys. Well, feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we've got to hear from you to do that. You can send me an email or audio file recorded on your phone to paeter@spiritblade.com. Once again, remember to visit spiritblade.com for your free copy of Spirit Blade Legacy Edition. Stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, I'll be sharing some stuff from the Christian Geek Radar, and as well as the final Summer of Free segment featuring playing Dungeons and Dragons for free, both paper and pencil, and a video game D&D. And In Search of Truth, I have really been looking forward to bringing that segment back. I apologize for how long it's been gone, even longer than I had intended. I'm very much looking forward to getting back into the book of Hebrews with you guys. That has just been on my heart all week, starting with my weekend at the college retreat. Reading Ephesians, I thought of you guys, I thought of our community, and I just thought, I really wanted to get back into Hebrews for me, and then to share what I get out of that with all of you guys. So hopefully, if God wants it to happen, you can look forward to that next week. Man, I thought this show was going to be way too short because I was like, I originally was going to do Christian Geek Radar this week, and I was like, I won't be able to. I want to finish today so I can have the next 3 days off. I'm going to bump that to next week, but then how am I going to fill the show? Turns out, by just doing a whole lot of blah, 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 which I'll do next week. As well, I'm sure. Till then, check out spiritblade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you guys. Thank you so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Fremson with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Something's coming through the wormhole.
Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No! 5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
And we conclude this three-parter with the siege.
wherein the new government of Bajor has tried to kick the Federation out, and the Federation has stupidly conceded, and so Sisko and his loyal officers stay behind to wage a secret, non-lethal war against the Bajorans while they try to get the evidence to Bajor to prove that this is actually a bad move.
I find it interesting in this episode that the Bajorans, who are so used to being the underdog, are now on top, while it's Sisko and crew that play John McClane.
Yeah. It's a nice juxtaposition of that. Let's see, some things of interest. Quark. Usually, the show kind of, I think, unfairly picks on Quark. They make fun of him because he has Ferengi values, but a lot of times, his values are not that unreasonable, and they just act like it because they're smug, but this time, they were evacuating all the non-Bajorans on the station, and so, excuse me again, and so Quark, he was selling tickets on these ships to get away, tickets on the lifeboats, if you will. But the thing was, he was selling tickets he did not have. So in other words, he's committing criminal acts. He's disaster profiteering and just outright fraud. And, you know, for once, we're justified in being mad at him. And yet, everyone's kind of just shrugging and saying, that's Quark, doo-doo-boop-a-doo-boop.
Well, they are being very angry with him, but they're not doing... They don't bring any consequences down on him. Now, you could argue that they had bigger fish to fry at the moment and they were going to punish his ass later.
But in later shows, when people do things that are bad, they'll at least say off camera, you have to go spend 6 weeks in prison or something like that.
That's true, like at the end of Little Green Men, yeah.
Yeah, and they never have to do anything like that where they have to... There's no implication that Quark's going to have to do anything. In fact, he still has his profits. He was carrying them around, this big, heavy thing. And they try to say it's a lesson about you can't take it with you, but he was taking it with him.
Yeah, he managed.
It's like we didn't see him lose his money. We didn't see him go to jail. And this is actually one of the most heinous things he does in the series. Now, the next episode, he does something arguably even more heinous, but, you know, that's also, that was, well, we'll talk about that when we get there. Yeah. But Lee Nollis, he has a couple great heroic moments. He really does have an arc through this. And one of his heroic moments I really liked is when people are in their panic about, you know, they're all panicking to get on the lifeboats. It's like being on a sinking ship because the Bajorans are coming aboard and they'll kill anyone who's not Bajoran. Lee Nala steps up and he gives a great speech about that. All you Bajorans, what are you doing? What are you running from? This is our world. These need to be for our guests who aren't us, who aren't safe here. And he does a really good job. And that's his main crux of this, is he going to be the legend that he's not really what they say he is, but can he live up to that legend and play that role for the good of his people?
Yeah, he really, you know, mans up and steps into the role required of him. He's a good character.
And there's also there's a couple great moments in this episode. You know, while our heroes are hiding in the ductwork, you know, well, you know, the Bajorans are coming on board and searching for things. And there's just some great moments of humor and personality.
Just some nice, light little character beats. Yeah.
And Deep Space Nine is really good about that. When you can tell sometimes, this guys, the story runs short and they don't have enough time to fill out their runtime. And they will put something valuable in there. Some bit of backstory or character interaction that's amusing, something like that.
Yeah, other shows use sawdust as filler. DS9 uses delicious Italian breadcrumbs.
Yes, they do good stuff. That, and I guess one more thing about this is, yet again, I don't want to pick on her, but Chief O'Brien's wife, Keiko, man, is she unpleasant sometimes. They're sitting there on the verge of evacuating, and O'Brien has chose to nobly stay behind, and she's basically just ragging and nagging on him to come. I mean, I understand that, you know, it's come with us, come with your family and all, but, you know, he is in Starfleet. He did swear an oath, and this is kind of what he's there for, and he's indispensable to what they're planning to do. This is for a larger thing.
Well, it's like you were saying, it's the Vicki Vale thing. We as the audience don't want O'Brien to give in to Keiko's demands. We don't want to see him say, you know what, I'm not going to be a hero. I'm going to get on that transport with my wife and daughter. We don't want to see her succeed. Yeah. So we find her attempts at persuading him tedious.
Tiresome.
At best. Yeah.
Well, and in case you weren't sure, I get that from the 1989 Batman movie, where we have at least that one long scene where Vicki Vale is basically there to try to talk Bruce Wayne out of not being Batman anymore. And it's this annoying thing that a lot of these stories about a hero have. It's like, we don't want to see him not be the hero. We get tired of those scenes. And so when you make that the crux of a character, is they're always nagging on them to stop being a hero, you just don't like that person.
Yeah, they're the person who's trying to say, stop the plot, stop the plot.
You need to not be cool, and you need to go and be a normal person. That might be psychologically valid, but that's not going to be someone we root for. We don't root for Vicki Vale.
If Batman were a real person, she'd have a point, but we didn't come to see average guy.
Yes. So anyway, the wrap-up of this trilogy, it was a good trilogy. My main complaint about this trilogy is that both the Circle and in particular Jaro Essa, who is the Bajoran who's running the Circle, he's a high-level politician who tried to take over and remake Bajor in his own image, if you will, governmentally. We never see any of them again. We don't hear about them again. And this is a shame because later political situations in Deep Space Nine, they just beg for this thing to come up.
Imagine if he was a recurring villain in one of the later Bajor machinations.
Stories. Yes, that would be amazing. And he could even be an occasional hero or at least an ally. I mean, they do that with Gul Dukat later on, where sometimes he's a villain, sometimes he's an ally. And I really, because it's Frank Langella, who I like. He's Diet Christopher Lee. So he's nowhere near as cool as Christopher Lee, but he's still pretty cool. And I really wanted to see him do more. And it's a real shame they wasted a potentially good character. And they bring in, like, new, you know, enemies of the week when it could be him come back. You know, obviously he's going to go to prison for a while, but there's no reason, like, he can't get out of prison. I mean, heck, we see one time one character named Garrick, he goes to prison for 6 months for attempted genocide. I think this guy can be excused for a year or two in prison. So, anyway, that's the episode. Next time we get into Season 2 proper, now that we've introduced it with this three-part premiere, with Invasion Procedures.
Oh.
And we'll see Lionel Luthor try to take over Dax.